Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Peters in the studio in Virginia with my co-host Mark Meckler on the phone from Austin, Texas. And Mark, you know, January has traditionally been the month where we spend a little time focused on the issue of life on Crossroads. And today we're going to talk about the March for Life that just wrapped up another successful event for 2022. The March for Life, if you visit their website, they say that their vision is, "We march because we envision a future world where the beauty and dignity of every human life are valued and protected." And just to give a little bit of history on the March for Life as we start out, the very first March for Life happened back in 1974, just a couple years after the Roe versus Wade decision was handed down. And the idea was to march in Washington in order to lobby congressional leadership to find a legislative solution to the Supreme Court's decision. And then soon after realizing that congressional protection of the unborn was not on the horizon, Nellie Gray decided to hold this March for Life every single year until Roe versus Wade is overturned. And Mark, I want to pause there. Thanks for being with us today as we talk about March for Life and the whole issue of abortion. I just want to get your thoughts on the concept of the March for Life. What is it? You know, how do you think about the March for Life? What has been its impact on you?
Well, I would say, from my perspective, it's the most important civil rights issue of our era and maybe of all time. I remember sitting in church maybe 6 months ago, and our pastor was talking about the issue of life. And he was talking in context of, well, he was talking to, first of all, to people who were pro-choice folks. And I know he upset them with the stuff he said, because fundamentally it's anti-Christian to believe in abortion, to believe that abortion is okay. And then he said something that impacted me much more deeply. He said, if you're sitting there and you're a pro-life person and you're really proud of yourself, don't be. And he said, over 60 million dead babies in this country, and we are the sovereigns in this country.
Yes.
And so whether we are pro-lifers or not, we shouldn't get too haughty, because what we're seeing is the biggest genocide in human history on our watch.
Yes.
And so for me, the thing that makes this issue so serious is that is what we're seeing. Our country, the country that we love, the country that we believe is the light of liberty in the world, has killed more innocent human beings than any country in modern history, maybe in world history. It's a very serious matter. And his point was, there's no guarantee God saves the United States of America. Why should he?
Yeah, that's a great point. And Mark, I love that you're starting us out with this program today where really we're going to be looking at criticisms of the pro-life movement and just how hostile and angry the abortion supporters have become in their activism. So I really appreciate that you're getting us grounded first in a place of humility, because that is indeed where we need to be. We are all sinners. And even as we think about how we have advocated for life, which is a worthy and righteous cause, we have not always done it with love and with grace, or the proper concerns and regards for people who really are struggling. So I appreciate that. I totally agree. We need to start with humility and not be prideful as we approach this. But, you know, getting back to the march this year, it seems to me like it was really different this year. And I think that's because the pro-life movement, myself included, is so hopeful that the Supreme Court will finally overturn Roe versus Wade when it decides the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case. That's the Mississippi heartbeat bill case that is currently before the Supreme Court. It's already been argued, and we're expecting a decision on it from the Supreme Court this term, probably in June. it's a big case, and it feels to me like this is the first time we've really thought Roe may finally die. What is your prediction, Mark, about how the Supreme Court is going to decide this Dobbs case?
Well, I'm really of two minds on this from a legal perspective. I'm very clear that Roe not only is immoral, but it was terrible law.
Yeah.
Lawyers will tell you that. Frankly, on both sides of the aisle, even constitutional lawyers on the left will say it's poorly decided from a legal reasoning perspective. So it should be overturned. And I think Dobbs sets it up to be overturned. I am a little bit more positive about it being overturned in the sense that it seems like the Supreme Court hasn't wanted to intervene in these cases with stays to stop these states from enforcing these laws. For example, mm-hmm. we have the Texas law right now. It's a different procedural posture, mm-hmm. but essentially abortion is not legal in Texas right now.
Yeah.
Essentially. And the Supreme Court has not stepped in to put a stay on that law. Mm-hmm. And they could have. And so to me, that would have me leaning a little bit towards, well, maybe they're actually going to overturn Roe versus Wade. The flip side for me is about knowing who is on the court, and especially looking at Justice Roberts. Justice Roberts is an institutionalist. And what I mean by that is he values the institution of the Supreme Court more than he values the Constitution itself. Mm. And the reason that that's a problem is he doesn't like to do things that might be controversial.
Yeah.
And certainly overturning Roe versus Wade is going to be controversial. And if I were putting money on it today, I would guess what we're going to see is some kind of new, bizarre, convoluted post-Casey standard mm-hmm. for how much restrictions could a state put on abortion. I think they will uphold what Mississippi is doing in Dobbs, but they're going to manipulate the standard in some way to create some other bizarre, unimaginable, and unworkable standard. That would be my best guess.
And that's so frustrating because that is effectively what they did both in Roe versus Wade initially, and then you mentioned Casey versus Planned Parenthood, where they adopted this undue burden standard. But what's really frustrating is that these are just court-created doctrines. They have no actual basis in the Constitution because, of course, the Constitution says nothing about protecting a right of abortion. I think you might be right. I hope that you're wrong, but I think you might be right. While we're talking about the court, we just heard recently about the news that Justice Breyer is going to be retiring. Do you think that gives us any kind of hint about what's going to happen with this case, or do you think that retirement will have any impact on the decision?
Yeah, I really don't think it does. I mean, Justice Breyer's 83 years old, and though he seems to be in very good health and very mentally fit, there is a ton of pressure for him to retire, and I understand that. You know, mm-hmm. they have a Democrat president in now. He is a very liberal jurist. They want the opportunity to replace him with a liberal jurist.
Yeah.
They made that mistake with Ginsburg. I think this is all a political calculation, and I don't think it really has any effect on the case at hand.
Okay, good to know. All right, now let's get down to sort of logistical, practical, legal stuff. And I just realized I should stop and make it clear that you are an attorney, Mark. I don't know how much we've told our listeners about that, but you are a licensed attorney, as am I. So, you know, even though most of the time we're not really talking about law practice type stuff, we do have some background in the law and, you know, understand how these cases work and what their effect is on the nation. And I just want to clarify, even if Roe versus Wade is overturned by this Mississippi case this term, that does not instantly, in and of itself, make abortion illegal anywhere, right? Doesn't it just return the issue to the states?
Yeah, it does. And I think this is really important because the radical pro-abortionists make it sound like abortion immediately becomes illegal across the entire country. And I wish that were the case.
Yeah.
It's not the case. What we do is we go back to a federal system. This is something that was not addressed by the Constitution, very clearly not addressed by the Constitution, invented by the courts. And so once it's out of the Supreme Court, once the court says, hey, this is not a an issue for the federal government anymore. It goes back to the states. We essentially go back to the pre-Roe situation where states are free to regulate or prohibit as they see fit. Mm-hmm. And until such time as we have a pro-life amendment protecting life of the unborn, it would remain in that place. It would be an issue for the states under a federalist system.
Yeah. And that is really where the issue belongs. And unless and until it becomes part of the Constitution, either of the federal Constitution or the states, it belongs in the political system so that people can go to their state legislatures, let their voices be heard, let them know what they want their own state laws to be on this issue, and we leave it to the political system to make laws concerning abortion. Now, if Roe does get overturned, we certainly expect some states to impose much stricter limits on abortion, including banning the practice. And I know some states have on the books what they call trigger laws, which basically say, in the event that Roe versus Wade does get overturned, this is what is going to be our state's law. Abortion is illegal, or what have you. So this is what the abortion proponents are so worried about. And in fact, some of their anger over this issue has led them to do what I describe as scoffing. And so, Mark, I want to see if you've noticed the same thing about, you know, the level of anger and just a crazy mean kind of tone on the part of the abortion lobby.
Absolutely. I mean, and we're seeing, I would take it one level higher and call it hysteria.
Yeah.
We're seeing absolute hysteria and viciousness from the left on this issue. And it's really interesting to me because I would argue that on the left, this has become part of the liturgy. By that I mean, and I don't mean this even metaphorically, their religion requires a belief in, a support of, a fanatical adherence to the doctrine of abortion on demand. And that is just part of what they believe. It's part of their practice. If you don't believe that, if you don't profess that, you're no longer a Democrat. I mean, the Democratic Party has come out and said there's no place for pro-life people in the Democratic Party. And so I think the anger is, it's essentially a religious fervor. It's very dangerous, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I want to spend the rest of our program today taking a look at some of these, I'll say, quote unquote, concerns that the abortion activists raise as they taunt, they really taunt pro-lifers. And what got me started on this, Mark, was an article in the Washington Post by a columnist, her name's Monica Hess, and it was just particularly nasty toward pro-lifers. But I also thought it was a good representation of the kinds of arguments that abortion supporters do bring up. And so I wanted to go through a few of the comments or arguments that she made. But before we start into them, I'll just tell you the title of this article is "Just What Is the Anti-Abortion Crowd's Plan for Supporting Pregnant People?" And the subtitle was, "The March for Life Activists Should Be Ready to Help Shoulder the Burdens They've Created." So just in the title there, you kind of get this whole idea that, you know, they're angry. Somehow pro-lifers are responsible for creating burdens on other people. And before we dive into the specific arguments that she makes to support this thesis, I just want to comment on the use of people. I don't know if you noticed it, but she says
I caught that.
Their plan for supporting pregnant people. Well, as far as I know, it's still just a scientific fact that only women become pregnant, right?
Look, I mean, and honestly, the weirdest thing is you could be banned from YouTube or Twitter for saying that.
Ugh.
And so they've gone crazy. And they just are denying basic biology, basic genetics, basic human physiology. This idea that, quote unquote, people have babies, or birthing people is another term they use. It's literal, again, not metaphorical. Yeah. This is literal insanity. This is a mental illness to believe this sort of thing.
Yeah. And so right from the start, I mean, I'm not even past the title and she's already lost a good bit of credibility with me. The first argument that she goes into, or that I maybe should say demand that she's making on the pro-life world, is birth control. She says we had better, and I quote, make it rain from the sky, end quote. But, you know, as I'm reading this, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a woman, and from what I see, birth control virtually rains from the sky already. I mean, I don't know what woman doesn't have access really to birth control and really to free birth control. It's just so readily available.
I've never heard a person say, testify in any committee hearing anywhere or on television, I can't get birth control.
No.
And frankly, if they did, there are so many people and organizations on the left, to their credit, because this is their mission and they desire it, that are willing to get that birth control to them or yes. give them free birth control. It's just, it's an outrageous contention that somehow women struggle to get birth control.
That's right. So whatever your views are on birth control, whether it's good, bad, whether you think it should be readily available or not, the fact is it is. And I want to bring up Planned Parenthood Federation for a minute because, you know, we've been told for years, and particularly in states where the legislatures have sought to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood, we've always been told that Planned Parenthood isn't just an abortion business. They do cancer screenings, breast exams, vaccinations. You know, they just want to take care of women. So won't they still be around to provide birth control? Or, you know, was that all just a big hoax? I think it will be really interesting to see what becomes of these clinics.
I'm going to say it openly. It was a big hoax because the vast majority of their business is actually just providing abortion.
Yeah.
Like even Leanna Wen, who is a radical leftist, she's the past president or past CEO of Planned Parenthood, she was fired for not strongly enough advocating for abortion. Not for saying we provide abortions, but advocating for the idea of having abortions. Mm-hmm. And she's a physician and she just wouldn't do it. But she's a radical progressive leftist feminist.
Yeah.
And even she wasn't radical enough on the idea that the main mission of Planned Parenthood is to provide abortions and to encourage women to have abortions.
Okay. Well, so much for the concern about birth control. I'm moving on to the next one now. And this is sort of a longer quote from this same Monica Hess article in the Washington Post, but I'm going to read you the quote because I was just sort of stunned when I read it. But she says, I hope you're ready for your odious, brave new world. I presume each and every one of you is planning to adopt several kids. Those chia seed size embryos that you insist on calling pre-born children eventually will be born to parents who never wanted to be parents, and someone will need to step up to the plate. Since adoption has been your solution, you're up, slugger. That's what she has to say to the pro-life movement. And, you know, I just want to point out a fact. I did a little bit of research on this week, and right now it's estimated, Mark, that between 1 and 2 million families are waiting right now in the U.S. to adopt children. And yet, right now, only 4% of unwanted babies get placed for adoption. And I have to think that has something to do with the ready availability of abortion as, you know, what people think of as the easier way out in that scenario.
I know a lot of folks over the last few years who are in the adoption market, for lack of a better term, and they've been trying to get kids. For whatever reason, they're unable to have children naturally, or they just want, they feel called by God to adopt children and to bring other children into their lives. And my experience is they're struggling to find kids to adopt. The system has made it so difficult for them.
Yeah.
I also know that in the Black community, by radical leftists, there's been a pushback against white parents or Hispanic parents adopting black children. That's not coming from the white community. It's coming from the black community.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and what you hear from folks like us is, we don't really care about the color of the skin, right? We want a child to love.
Right.
We care about content of character. But there is this pushback from the radical left to prevent adoption, to keep them from being easy and to keep them from being readily available. And it's terrible. I think that should absolutely be an option. I feel for the mothers who get into these scenarios. I'm not making judgment on them. But we don't want to make them double victims.
Yeah.
They've made bad decisions. They've had things happen in their lives. They end up with an unwanted pregnancy. It makes it much worse to abort that child. And God gave them that child. And if they have the opportunity to give that child as a gift to another couple that's willing to raise them in a loving home, to me, that's one of the most extraordinary acts of love and generosity that a human being could do. And the fact that she's acting like this is some kind of a horrible challenge that people are going to recoil from, I think that's more than welcomed by the anti-abortion community.
I agree 100%. And, you know, the other thing I take issue with in this particular statement in the article is it implies that if a child is born to parents who didn't initially want to be parents, that their life just isn't going to be worth living. And that's just not true. You know, some babies who might be unwanted or unexpected at first will end up being loved and cared for by their birth moms or by other family members. Others will be adopted into loving homes, as you pointed out. And yes, it's true. Some unwanted children will have difficult lives. That is a sad fact. But it's not one that's limited to kids whose parents didn't want them as babies. It's true of all kinds of different kids. And it's an opportunity for extended families, churches, and community groups to step in and love our neighbors by loving those kids and their families. And then, you know, I have to add, people rise above their circumstances all the time. History is full of the examples. So how dare we say that a child shouldn't be born if the parents don't want to become parents at that moment? And I think about examples of people in history. Abraham Lincoln, born into poverty. Albert Einstein struggled with a speaking disability in his early childhood. Benjamin Franklin had to leave formal education and go to work as a child and ended up educating himself. They had difficult childhoods, difficult lives, but how dare someone suggest that they shouldn't have been born?
Yeah, and I would add, and I know you know this gentleman personally, you write for The Stream, Pastor James Robeson.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally, his mom came to the verge of abortion, and he was the product of rape. So he's lived an incredibly productive, bountiful, blessed life, despite the worst circumstances of beginning. You know, and he is a radical pro-life advocate. I can tell you in my own life, people in my circle, I know people who've had children out of wedlock. They didn't want those children. It wasn't an intentional thing. And I've actually seen it turn their lives around. You know, we have a young man that works for us on our staff who, as a young man, got a woman pregnant, suddenly found himself a father. He was living a bad life.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that he would tell you in hindsight he shouldn't have been doing, drinking, drugs, partying, all that stuff. He turned his life around on the dime because of this gift that God put in his life. He said, I'm going to be a father. I have to change. He went to church. He found a mentor. And he works for us at a very high level now. He's an extraordinary young man. Yes. In my own family, I have somebody who at 19 years old had her first baby, was on the wrong path. She's now a major executive at a national, international bank because she had an unwanted pregnancy that she decided not to terminate and realized, I'm going to be a mom. I need to change my life. I need to do things different. So sometimes in difficult circumstances, I'm not suggesting people do this intentionally, but sometimes in those difficult circumstances, the baby that's always a gift from God turns out to be a double gift because it causes a parent to turn their lives around.
Amen to that. And I think we can all think of examples like that. And that's a good segue into the next issue that I want to go to, is that Monica and other abortion supporters like to try to scare pro-lifers by reminding us that, oh, it could be your daughter facing an unplanned pregnancy. She might only be 15 years old, and what if she doesn't have a choice? And the way Monica Hess describes it in her column, she says, as a parent, you begin to fully realize that accidental pregnancies don't happen to bad people. They happen to all kinds of people. And maybe not every accident needs to be punished with lifelong consequences. So I just take issue with that. You know, first of all, life is a gift. It's never a punishment. Life is a gift. And then secondly, every pregnancy has lifelong consequences, whether it ends in a birth, which, you know, there's a new human being. What an amazing, wonderful thing. Or if it ends in abortion, abortion has lifelong consequences too, right?
It does. And I think these are absolutely ignored or denied by the radical left. The majority of women have regrets, lifelong regrets about abortion. There are all kinds of counseling services and support groups for women who regret their abortions, and this is carried with them as a trauma for the rest of their lives. You've terminated a human life. And from my perspective, that obviously was the ultimate consequence to that life. And so just this presentation by the left that, oh, it has consequences, I think they also ignore, like you said, it has incredibly positive consequences. There's nothing, no greater gift than you can have in your life, in my opinion, having been a parent twice. There's no greater gift than having brought a life into this world and being a parent. So yeah, there are consequences, the best kind.
Well, we're almost out of time, Mark, but I just want to close by quoting the angry words at the end of Hess's column and giving a response to them. She says, "You are responsible for the pregnant people whose futures you have changed and for their future children, and both are going to need a lot more than your prayers." And to that, Mark, I would just say, you know, the pro-life movement has indeed prayed for a changed future for pregnant women and their children. She's right about that. We've prayed that pregnant women and their children would have a future with hope and with life. And then finally, I would agree with her that hurting people need more than just our prayers, but prayers are a great place to start. And the pro-life community I know combines prayer with action all the time. Would you agree with that?
If you travel the country in pro-life circles like you and I do, what you see is some of the most extraordinary love and generosity. If you're a pregnant woman and you have an unwanted pregnancy, if you're listening right now, or if you know people who are in this situation, I promise you that there are Christian pregnancy crisis centers that will give you the counseling, the love, clothes, money, help getting medical care, whatever you need. There's no shortage of any of that stuff because the pro-life community is built on that stuff.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to a beautiful close. And I would say specifically to listeners in this area, if you're facing an unplanned pregnancy or know someone who is, I would encourage you to get in touch with Ava Care in the Harrisonburg area. You can find them online. Just Google Ava Care, A-V-A Care. We want to thank our generous sponsors today at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening and for your continued support. If you'd like to make a donation, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. I'm Rita Peters with Mark Meckler and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.